Hello, and welcome to Season 5 of Human Awareness, the official podcast for High Global, where we take you on a journey through love, intimacy, and sexuality. I'm your host, Haya, and I'm inviting our guests to open their hearts and their experience so we can all learn together. Okay, with that out of the way, let's roll tape on our interview. Hello, and welcome back to Human Awareness. I am joined today with one of my favorite humans, and I'm so excited to have Marcy on the podcast today. I've known Marcy for a hot minute now. I think you were actually there for one of my first high workshops, I think. Uh-huh. And there's been a lot of evolution since then. We've had you on the podcast once before, and I really wanted to invite you back. Would you mind starting by telling us your name, your pronouns, and where in the world you are, please?
I would love to. My name is Marcy Bram, and my pronouns are she, her. And I live in a little town called Lakeport. It's a tiny town in California. And I get to look down over Clear Lake every day and see the horizon. It's quite magical to live here.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
So I imagine many of our listeners know you as a high facilitator. But the reason I wanted to invite you on the podcast today is you've been writing some really impassioned things on Facebook recently after a trip to the movies. Tell us what happened there. What happened for you?
Oh, I had heard just a little bit about go to the Barbie movie. And part of me was like, I can't imagine what that's going to be like. And it happened to be alone one weekend, and I just took myself to the Barbie movie, and I sat in the theater going, this is familiar to me. But it's all dressed up in pink and silly plastic and little tiny feet. And Jason was my partner, who's also a high facilitator, came home and I said, we need to go to that again. So I went again. And then I went a third time. And each time I went, I'm going to use the word incensed. I just started getting angry and was really unexpected, to tell you the truth. I had no idea that it would affect me that way. And I put my first little, I tend to diminish myself by saying my little piece on Facebook. And this is one of the things about the patriarchy that I'm watching. So I just put out, go see this movie. You know, there's a lot to it. And what really triggered me was people's responses, because there was a lot of responses like, oh, I don't want to see a movie about a doll. And I found myself answering people in an even more fiery way than I have experienced myself in the past.
I remember both my sister and I playing with Barbie dolls. And I remember the general criticism being like, look, these are completely unreasonable beauty standards. And so when I heard there was going to be a Barbie movie, I was like, oh God, this is not going to be good. And then I saw who directed it and who was in it. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. This could actually be interesting. What was the thing that made you go? I imagine you had a similar impression of the Barbie franchise as I did.
That's true. I will tell you that the Barbie doll came out when I was 7 years old. And I remember wanting it really badly for no particular reason that I understood at seven. And I think I had just read some little thing that said the Oppenheimer movie came out at the same time. These are two must-sees. And I never actually got to the Oppenheimer movie, but I did go to the Barbie movie. And you know, part of my world is about dealing with, I don't know if I like that word very well, but being present to people that have had consent problems in the world and being able to find a way to talk to them. And then also to hear the person that did this inappropriate thing to them, and time after time, having people not be willing to be accountable. And so that's woven into what is this thing that the Barbie movie is presenting? And I'm trying to unravel it still in my mind, but it's just produced so much awareness, actually. It's changed my awareness deeply. And I thought I already was aware. That's the thing that's really interesting is like, whoa, I thought I understood this dynamic, and I understand it better every day, every single day.
And so this is a movie that wraps an important concept in Bubblegum Pink. How did that speak to you?
I felt like what Greta was doing was trying to make it palpable for people that wouldn't necessarily think they wanted to see a movie. I don't think a lot of people go, oh, I want to go see a movie about the patriarchy, because first of all, they get defensive or they get pissed off or whatever. And so I think she's, I don't know her at all. I've only read a little bit about her, but it was an extraordinary idea to put this pink bubblegum plastic world over this concept in a way that maybe, just maybe, other people could see it that wouldn't necessarily even consider the topic or look at themselves through it. I think it was a way to look at, have people look at themselves. It was brilliant. Just brilliant.
And so do you feel like this actually made it like more accessible to people?
Number one is it was more accessible to people. And I think the playfulness of it did something also. And watching the, each time I watched it, I watched their faces and these little subtle things that were in there that you really had to pay attention for to grasp. I think it highlighted some silly things that we humans do that we aren't even aware are the, this under bubbling thing about the patriarchy. It's a weird thing to say it that way, because I think the patriarchy went underground. And there's a moment in the movie when Ken's wanting a job and he goes to this big high rise and there's a group of men standing in the lobby and the obligatory female standing off to the side with a cup of coffee or something for them. And he wants a job. And the guy says, no, you know, I don't have a job for you. And Ken blatantly just out loud says, I thought you were doing the patriarchy here, meaning you would just hire me because I'm a man, right? And the guy kind of takes a breath and puts his head down.
I'll take a high-level, high-paying job with influence, please.
Okay, you'll need at least an MBA. And a lot of our people have PhDs.
Isn't being a man enough?
Actually, right now, it's kind of the opposite.
You guys are clearly not doing patriarchy very well.
No. No, we're doing it well. Yeah, we just hide it better now.
Oh. And that's what I think was, that was a powerful moment to go, oh, everybody's aware it's still happening, but we're doing it quietly so nobody can point the finger at us and get pissed off at us, you know, as corporations or companies. So moments like that, there were others, but that's the one that stands out to like, okay, people, are you paying attention?
Yeah. And why is this something that is important to you? Why does this make your blood boil?
Very big question. I will say that my life has had tons of patriarchy piled on top of me. I was in a marriage for 24 years that was just stereotypically that dynamic. The guy did this and I did that. I have really worked on this. And what's true is that the remnants of it have never gone away from me. You know, the remnants of being put down, of being minimized, of being diminished, of being ridiculed even. It's painful to go in there. And I keep going in there and going, what? I'm going to say, what the fuck was I thinking? But what I didn't actually know. I had no understanding that I could put my experiences under that label. So when the label started to point out to me, oh, this is patriarchy, that's patriarchy, all of a sudden my own narrative became much clearer. Like, oh, that's what was going on. And I didn't have a name for it. It didn't make it easier. It made it easier to understand, but it didn't fix the problems.
So what I'm hearing from you is that you're observing all these things out in the world that are different than they ought to be, harder than they ought to be. And at some point you're like, wait a minute, there's one word that covers all of those things.
Yes, that's exact. It's everywhere. I cannot hardly find anything that hasn't been touched or completely smooshed into what that dynamic is in the world. I've just read just an hour ago an astonishing article in Scientific American about the myth of man as the hunter is wrong. what? You know, a whole other place. Okay, now history is going to get rewritten because these scientists are saying that's not actually so. And it was another way to make sure that the male-bodied people are superior to the female-bodied people.
And how is that showing up for you most vividly right now out in the world or in your life?
Well, I have to say that my day-to-day life is not, the dynamics in my world are not, you know, I'm not having upsets with the people that I live with or in my family. That's not the case. It's partly the work I was talking about before of being with people that have had inappropriate things occur. Mm-hmm. And it makes me super, extremely sad. It's heartbreaking to me that even little tiny things are so painful. So I'm hearing people, and the complaint isn't necessarily egregious. You know, it's much smaller than they would have been 10 or 20 years ago, but the response is 10 times as big. So I work at getting underneath what is that that's so painful underneath there, and a lot of it has to do with this insidious, these little things that happen, and they are insidious, that people can't identify as harming them. You know, they don't in and of themselves like, oh, that's a fairly normal way to speak in the world, and then mm-hmm. they start piling up. It's just start piling up.
Without breaking confidence, obviously, could you bring that to life for me? I'm trying to kind of visualize what that looks like in practice.
Let's say that someone was in a hug and the hand of one of the people went below the waist in a way that felt invasive to the person. The person doing that may say, well, I didn't mean to. You know, there's a lot of excuses and not intention. But the person who received that, we don't know if there was trauma ahead of that. We don't know what their history is. And something about that just made them feel unsafe in the world. And there's a lot of people that feel unsafe in the world right now for, you know, thousands of reasons. And so then to pull that apart with the person that felt unsafe, what's under that? What's, you know, do you want to talk about why that felt unsafe? But this is the part that is most heartbreaking for me to witness, is the person comes to me, say, and I say, let's go talk to the person that did this. And the person that put their hands in a place that weren't what they weren't welcome can't be accountable. They want to rather say, well, I didn't mean to, or it was just a little thing that shouldn't have hurt you, instead of saying, wow, that hurt you and I'm sorry, and just be done with it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. I have had my personal experience of that, of something hurt me and I just wanted him to say, I'm sorry that hurt you. Instead, I got, it wasn't my intention, blah, 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 all of this stuff. And even while I coached them to, can you say it this way? I don't want to hear that. And I was being really good in my communication. I was not attacking. And when they finally got to, I'm really sorry, Mercy. I get that hurt you. I burst into tears, Hayek. It's so powerful to me. Yeah, it's right here. The emotion is, women especially don't feel validated for their feelings. You just haven't gotten that in the world because it's really scary to say I did something wrong. It doesn't even matter what gender we are. It's just scary to say I hurt you, because we're more afraid of some punishment or some consequences we don't want. And so when it's just clear, I'm so sorry that hurt you. I've witnessed this dozens of times of the women finally going, the relief just rolls off of them like boulders, and they're complete. I had one person come to me as something they'd been carrying for 16 years. It was a comment. It was a single comment. And by listening to them and saying, I'm so sorry, it wasn't even mine to do. I mean, it wasn't my thing that I did. And they wrote me the next day and said, I had no idea. I feel so much lighter. 16 years. That makes me nuts. That makes me crazy.
That's really helpful. Thank you. And when you tie this to the patriarchy, does that feel like there's this sense of entitlement or this complete unawareness that that isn't even, like, it doesn't even appear on people's radars. Is that what's happening?
I think it's both, but I think that I'm going to use the word cluelessness, that just that it's, I'm a good person. I'm nice. I connect with people. You know, I want to hug them. I want to share with them. And then they say these little things that are diminishing or right. minimizing someone. There are those in the world that are all about more money, more entitlement, more power. We know who those, we don't even have to say their names. But the everyday patriarchy is teeny. It's actually mm-hmm. teeny. And if you only had one of those a year, you wouldn't notice. But when you have 20 of them a day, all of a sudden, what I witness is like this piling on of something like, you know, someone explains something to you after you already know it, or mm-hmm. they tell you to smile when you're not wanting to smile, or they silence themselves, or their response is, you get interrupted. Women get interrupted something like four times as much every minute as men. And what I witness in myself and others is that just like, and then they're piling on each other. And then all of a sudden one day you're like, I don't want to listen to this person anymore. I don't feel affectionate to this person anymore. I'm pulling away. I'm becoming more insular and just staying in my own self because I don't even want to say anything that'll give me another one of those, I call them little flares. They're like little flares. Mm-hmm. And so, and then the person doesn't even know that that's the patriarchy working on them. They don't know mm-hmm. it, but they know something is feeling shitty. You know, it doesn't feel good anymore. And the same with the person doing that, the interrupting. It's just that that has become what we're fluent in. That's the language of the world. And until we decide we have to take it apart, it isn't going to change. And that means we have to call out ourselves and call out others when we do it. One of my little ways of doing is I stop talking if something hurts me. Mm-hmm. And I need to step up in myself and go, wait a second, I'm noticing that hurt. And I don't want to be compliant, or when I minimize myself, like I did at the beginning, saying my little pieces.
It was really beautiful both to hear you do it and then to catch yourself. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is part of your practice. Mm-hmm. This has become a practice, right? And I think the kind of cultural norm that women don't get to take up space or are trying not to take up space is one instance of exactly what we're talking about. So many ways that systems are built to sustain themselves. And I think that is something that it's pervasive and almost invisible unless you're willing to start looking. And so when you're having a conversation with someone about that, like, hey, I keep seeing this thing and they haven't seen that thing, you know, it's crazy making.
That's absolutely true. I watch myself minimize myself, and I don't feel like I show up as a minimized person in the world. I don't, but there's these little things. And I recently read Carol Gilligan's book, Why Does Patriarchy Persist? And she calls it a ghost. She calls it the patriarchy itself a ghost. It's a framework, and it's not spoken about anymore. You know, early in the 60s and 70s, it was out there. We were, you know, people were protesting and making a big thing about it. And then something happened and it went underground. And when I think of a ghost, I think of, you know, these tendrils, and they swoop around invisible and they wind themselves into people's heads and hearts and bodies. And we don't stand up for ourselves. We don't say the thing that we need to say. And one of the words that Carol uses is women are trained not to protest, not to say, no, I didn't like that. I don't want to go there. We just go, what's better for you, honey? It makes me go, bleh. You know, like, what do you want? I did that for years and years and years. Don't do it anymore. But put myself in the back burner all the time. All the time.
And to me, it feels like that intersects with gender roles in a way that It's really challenging.
One of the things I haven't been able to figure out or locate is any, like, when was that moment? When was that a million years ago or thousands of years ago when all of a sudden it became clear that the men were in charge of everything and the women were not? Certainly there were matriarchal cultures, and there still are. Lots of the indigenous people in this country were matriarchal cultures. And somewhere, I wish I knew what that moment was. And now reading this article this morning that women hunted just as much as men did, it's like, well, it wasn't then, you know, maybe there was equality then. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the moment in the Barbie movie was, you know, Ken's day was made if he got noticed by Barbie.
I think for me, the way the movie spoke so loudly was that it turns the preconceived notions on its head, right? So in Barbie land, like, the Barbies have all the power.
Right.
And it is, in theory, a matriarchy. And yes. Yet it is so deeply internalized that they don't have the power that they're mm-hmm. almost self-sabotaging all the way through the film until at the end they go, wait a minute, what are we doing? When they go outside of Barbie land and kind of go into the real world where it's like, I don't want to use the word normal, but the way we are more experienced with the world, mm-hmm. it becomes such a stark contrast that when they go back, you're like, oh yeah, wait a minute. This isn't even all that exaggerated. This is really, like, when you see it the other way around, it feels extremely jarring. It's like, oh, that's that should tell us something.
Those moments when Barbie was on, you know, Venice Beach skating, and suddenly she was being gawked at, and, you know, you could just imagine somebody grabbing her butt or something, and on the other side, Ken was like, oh, I'm important here. Whoa, isn't that just the coolest thing? And right. It was stark. But then the other moment I loved was when she saw the billboard with all the Miss Americas.
Oh, look, the Supreme Court.
They're so smart.
Yeah.
And she thought that was the Supreme Court. Because that was the Supreme Court in Barbie Land. And you're right, it's very unreal. Barbie Land is very unreal. And yet everybody, you know, they made them look happy and prosperous and delighted at their lives. Mm-hmm. That's not really real either.
So what do we do?
What do we do? Well, we have to speak up when we feel it. And in order to feel it, we have to pay really deep attention to ourselves. And that's not what everybody wants. I have had women say to me, I don't want to talk to you about this. You scare me. Which is like, wow. It's hard work, actually, to not just see yourself being compliant, being okay with being interrupted, being minimized. Mm-hmm. But then you have to somewhere find the courage to say it out loud. And what I've noticed, Haya, is that a lot of people, when they protest, I'm going to say women that are so disgusted and so absolutely furious, they end up, I don't want this to sound horrible, but they end up speaking in a way that can be heard. People are going to go, well, ooh, that's too much for me. And then so the other side of that is, so you mean I can't be emotional? When I speak, I can't raise my voice and be listened to. So there's this finding this courage. It's just raw courage to figure out how to say things that don't cause people to want to run away or to be afraid of you, so that it can go in. And, you know, the other thing I do is teach these communication courses. And it just gets more and more and more nuanced. I just see the tiniest little thing can turn someone off or open them up. And mm-hmm. we never know, because we don't know who we're talking into, actually, because, you know, it's not all written on their face. We can't see it all. And saying something to one person is like, oh yeah, I get that. And another person like, how dare you talk to me?
The scary thing to me hearing you say that is that even in your speaking up, there is caretaking, you know, of those. And I think that's where we get this really interesting fracture between what the image of what a masculine person should be and how fragile male egos can be. And it's almost like I say something inappropriate. You say, hey, hiya. Like, I want to call you in. That wasn't like, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I get defensive. And like, there's almost a cultural stereotype that at that point I shout or I become violent. Mm-hmm. I do neither of those things personally. And it's like, oh, like if I did, it's like, oh, that is okay. Because everybody around me goes, yeah, that's what men do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it gets really insidious for me, in that somehow that is so internalized.
You're right. I wish I had some really big, shiny answer. I don't have answers. I have a lot of questions. And I think I've written this. I'm like, I don't pretend to know how we're going to get out of this, but it's emotional for me. I feel my emotion rising just to say it, because I see so much pain in the world that it's not necessary. It's just not necessary. So sometimes I think, you know, we have this culture of reporting something that didn't work. What we don't seem to see is someone coming up saying to me, you know, I think I hurt that person. Can you help me unravel that? Can you go with me so that I can apologize in a way that works? It's so hard for people to say, I think I did that. It's way out of balance that there's more complaints rather than admissions. I guess I'll call them admissions.
Right.
And if we could all just settle into that, we're all just human beings really trying really hard to just be kind. I mean, Brene Brown says we're wired for connection. Mm-hmm. We are wired for connection. That's what we want. We want to be loved. We want to be seen. We want to be held and taken care of when we need it. And we want to do the reverse for mm-hmm. anybody. We want to give and receive. And so often these layers get in the way that we start to pull back, and then nobody has anything that they want. Nobody's feeling validated in the world. And I just know that right now I'm just continuing to say, what's going on? What's going on in me? I can't do much more than what's going on in me and talk mm-hmm. about it, and talk about it in a way that I don't want to hurt people. You know, I don't want to attack. I don't want to have people move away because I'm too scary, because I'm saying things they don't want to hear. But that's what I know to do right now. And part of me is like, who is this Marcy right now? I don't even know her. Been around a long time now. And I feel like it's something beyond me that's asking me to speak, actually. There's something that's nudging me that's when I write, it feels like I'm taking dictation. It's not something mm-hmm. I study and make outlines for and do footnotes. It's just like, whoa, this is just roaring out of my heart. And I've been writing for 25 years, you know, and I believe that when it comes out, that it wants to be heard by at least one other person, if not several or dozens. Yeah. I think sometimes asking questions is way better than having answers, actually. People yeah. have their own answers. And in the communication courses, we just say, just listen, keep listening. People will find their way. You know, they'll find their own answers usually. And I watched it actually last night. We had a session and I watched this arc. This person was really upset and crying and emoting, and it was just wrenching their heart. And the person just kept listening, and I kept listening. That sounds really hard, or whatever. And then it peaked, and then right on it was this most beautiful arc. And then on the other side, oh, I can do this. Oh, I can look at it from this way. Oh, maybe I'm not noticing this part of me that gets triggered. It was stunningly beautiful. And well, I know that nobody listens deep enough in our culture. I just don't. The things that are wrong with communication is that we're thinking when we're listening about how to reply.
Mm.
And I've sort of just narrowed it down. Most people listen to respond instead of understand. And if we listened just to understand, the world would be different. It would be different, because people are craving to be heard and like, oh, that was your experience. Wow. I have two values that I believe lead my life. And the first one is being an inquiry. And inquiry has nothing to do with having answers. You know, it's just not. I don't have answers. But I do want to go inside myself and be inside others with, what do you think? What do you think that is? Why do you think that's true? And when we have the space to be heard about that, sometimes that changes the trajectory of our life just by recognizing that, oh, that was that thing that happened when I was a teenager that made me think that. But I'm not that person now. I'm not that. I'm something beyond that.
Yeah. I'm curious what you do when, I guess what I'm trying to say is that a fish doesn't know it's in the ocean, right? That is just the ocean. And when occasionally when I talk to people and I call out something they say or do, it is so hard to get through because they have no idea what I'm talking about. Like you can call something out, but then when there's like, no, do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of hard to find the words. Yeah. Like those, like, I feel like if you and me go into a conversation together, you know, we've both done communication training. We've both done high. You've done a lot more of it than I have. I feel like there's a pretty good chance that I will be heard, that you are leading with curiosity. That is not how most of the world works in my experience. And some of the most egregious instantiations of the patriarchy are brought forth by people who have the most to gain and the most to lose from the patriarchy going away. You know, they're sitting on their little patriarchy booster seats. I have no idea how to nudge somebody awake. That's where I get so horribly stuck. It's like, okay, to have this conversation, I need you to commit to doing a couple of hours of research and for us to have a real heart open conversation about this. Like, I very rarely have that level of influence over.
Well, I don't think very many of us have that much influence over anybody, actually.
Right.
I notice that when I want to share with someone that something that I perceive that they did that hurt me, mm-hmm. if I only talk about my feelings and I completely subtract the word you out, I have a better chance of making a little bit of headway. It's like, you know, instead of saying, what you just said really hurt me, that was blah, blah, blah. Say, I just noticed that the words that I just heard landed in a tender place in me, and I'm feeling really sad right now. And this is not the way most people talk. In fact, it's a tiny little percentage.
Right.
But I do get a response from that then that they listen. I think we get in trouble when we want to be somebody's teacher. Unless they asked us for advice or ask us to help them understand something. It takes a lot of thought to actually, it's like a whole new language. How do I say this so that somebody's not defensive? So if I'm in an upset with someone, I go really slow and I'm like, hang on a minute, I want to get this right. And I try that. But out in the world, when somebody's like in your face, like all of a sudden, you know, the knee-jerk thing is you're being an asshole or whatever it is. And it's kind of, you know, I never really thought of it this way. It's like, how do I be peace or be love, like we talk in high? How do I be love in the face of something that is really painful and really insulting or really inappropriate? And it takes enormous self-regulation to go, hang on a minute here. My value is not to attack, so I'm gonna feel into if I can say anything at all that will be useful. It doesn't change the world very fast, you know.
Very few things do.
That's true. It's very true. I mean, all we have to do is look around us and see horrible communication everywhere, you know, and death and dying and war because of it. And yeah, I'm not gonna go down that path, but.
Yeah.
So
I hear that.
Yeah.
I'm curious, is there anything about this that's giving you hope? Do you see progress anywhere?
That's a beautiful question.
It depends on the answer, I suppose.
In this book, the Carol Gilligan book, she says there's the hope of anger. Mm-hmm. That landed for me. And like, so sometimes I, I don't even think there is such a thing as hope, because I think it either is or it isn't. Sometimes we put all our, you know, all of our eggs in one basket, and hope is, you know, it's amorphous. But the anger of hope means I can be angry, and inside of that, I have some idea that at least by acknowledging my true feelings, that's a human thing to do, and it's a possibility to inspire any other human to at least recognize that in themselves. So in lots of ways, I'm kind of astonished that I went to a little movie and then I wrote, you know, 20 pieces on Facebook, and you're talking to me about this. Is like, in and of itself, like, well, wow, maybe a couple more people will hear something. Mm-hmm. Some of my answers, when one person said to me early on, he said, well, how come they didn't show Barbie and Ken walking off into the sunset happily ever after? And I'm like, oh, honey, you didn't really get it, did you?
Right.
It was about female sovereignty and blah, blah, blah. But I engaged with them. And then they, for a moment, had another thought about how the world might be. And there were more of those than I thought. And now I'm working on another piece that will hopefully be out in the world in 6 months or so, where I'm talking about this. And sometimes it's just preaching to the people that I already know. I don't think of myself as a preacher. But, you know, at the end of workshops, I often say, the world needs everybody's love so much. If you can go out in the world and, it's going to make me cry, love one person that is clearly sad or clearly angry, and you just love them and listen to them, the ripple, we don't know about the ripples that can go out in the world. We really don't. Yeah. And I have to have that hope, Kaya, that one drop of love can go out. And if we throw a whole boulder of love in the lake, they're bigger. Mm-hmm. And then other people's experience of not pushing back, of not being angry, of just, I think most people that are saying things that are mean and rude, there's hurt. There's hurt in there. They wouldn't be doing that. People don't want to be mean on purpose. Something in there is still, what's going on?
Totally.
What's going on? Tell me what your hurt is. And then all of a sudden, they're in your arms sobbing because somebody paid attention.
Yeah.
So
beautiful. What do you wish people noticed about this?
Well, I'm going to go back to that thing about most people listen to respond. And if they would stop thinking about their opinion and their previous experience that made what you're saying not true, they could just be in inquiry. And you've used the word, you're curious, several times. It's like, it's just such an exquisitely beautiful thing to be curious in the world. I mean, how could we possibly know all the answers in somebody else's, one person's head, let alone the world? We can't know other people's experience. And can't even know all the ways we would personally respond to things that we've never experienced before. It's all magically. So what I wish is people would stop comparing it to their past, stop comparing anything to their past, about feelings in particular, and go, I wonder what is the gift that this person has for me that I have no idea what it is. I had a person in a course that had been fairly quiet, not contributing to the course at all. And then all of a sudden, they did share, and it was like, whoa, I had no idea. You know, we do this thing, we judge the cover, and even if it had been weeks and they hadn't happened to say anything, and then they do, and you're like, wow, I didn't know that. And if I'd stuck with my story about them, I would never have had the opportunity to feel this beautiful flower that they were, and that they were learning and opening to. And it just reminds me every time that those stories we make up about each other deserve a whole bunch of curiosity.
If you, I know you described yourself as not a teacher and not a preacher, but if you were to give somebody an invitation, like somebody's listening to this podcast, it's like, hey, I invite you to sit with a question, or I invite you to think about something or feel into something. What would you invite?
I would love to invite people to look within and get really honest with themselves and start to notice the places in their lives that don't flow, that don't have congruency, that they feel out of step with. And instead of blaming someone else, that they sit with themselves and go, what part of me is contributing to that? One of the pieces I wrote, like, when I silence myself, I'm the patriarchy. When you interrupt me, you are the patriarchy. When I comply, I am the patriarchy. We are all it. This is not gender specific. In fact, it has nothing to do with it in the grand scheme of things. There is the history of it. But right now, women's compliance, being compliant, is as much a part of it as somebody bossing us around. And so if we all realize that we're in this together, this is our culture's problem to solve. It's not men's problem to solve, and it's not women's problem to solve, and it's not every other gender's problem to solve. It's all of us. We are all in this. And to catch ourselves when we do something that is compliant, that is holding on to the idea that women have to be good and men have to be strong. That, like, well, why? Let's ask ourselves.
Yeah.
Write it the heck down. Start to be an inquiry with yourself. I don't know any other way. That would be an invitation. Look, keep looking.
What I'm taking away from that invitation as I'm sitting with it is, you know, I might not be able to convince anybody else, but I can choose not to be on that team.
Years ago, when I first started doing work with High Global, I didn't try to convince anybody in my family to do that. And after several years, one of my sisters said, "How come you're so happy?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, here's what I'm doing. You know, there were lots of components, but a lot of it had to do with, I'm looking at myself. Thank you to High Global. I'm looking. Somebody said to me recently, I think you were there, you know, how come you do this to make us think in a workshop, you know? And I said, mm-hmm. Well, my job is to stir you up. My job is to rip open your chest in the kindest possible way and have you look within and go, what the heck am I doing? Why am I doing that thing? And try to come to it from the bigger worldview of love doesn't fail.
Yeah, love doesn't fail. I think that is a beautiful sentiment to end on.
Yeah, it is.
Marcy, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. It's always a gift.
Thank you for your beautiful attention and asking the questions that help draw me even deeper into where I have been pedaling for these last months. It's been a real gift. Thank you so much. Loved it every minute.
Thank you so much for joining us for our episode today. If you like the topics of the High podcast, check out our workshops. We do them online and in person. Learn more on high.org. That is HAI.org. See you soon.